This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
We're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects today on Today in Ohio, the Medical Mart, which has been renamed and reused and is a big waste of money, and they want to waste some more. We'll get to that on the podcast discussion of the news from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. I'm Chris Quinn, here with Lisa Garvin, Layla Atassi, and Laura Johnston. And Laura has some history covering the Med Mart.
I feel like I'm going to end up being either very apologetic or defensive at some point in the conversation.
No, we never defended it. We called that thing out warts and all. We were making jokes from the beginning about what a waste of money it would be. But let's get to that in due time. We have some other things to talk about first. How did a family's ancestry search through a DNA test turn into a truth is stranger than fiction malpractice suit against Summa Health System and a fertility doctor? Lisa, this one is really one for the ages. It's not what you expect when you do a DNA test to trace your family lineage.
It really sounds like a Lifetime movie of the week topic. I'm going to start at the beginning. Janine and Mike Harvey of Akron were trying to get pregnant, and they weren't able to, so they underwent what was called intrauterine insemination back in 1971 at Summa Health. So that in intrauterine is different. It's an old school thing where they take his sperm and inject it into her uterus, you know, where the egg is. And their daughter, Jessica, was born in 1992. Jessica, now an adult, and her husband got an Ancestry.com DNA kit as a Christmas present a year or so ago. They did it, and she discovered that her father, Mike, is not her biological father at all. After they dug around a little bit, they found that her true father was another man undergoing infertility treatment at the same clinic at the same time. So obviously their sperm got mixed up with the Harvey sperm, and they think it happened during what they call the semen washing process. They get the semen and then they wash it and then inject it in. Janine and Mike Harvey and their adult daughter, Jessica Harvey Galloway, filed a medical malpractice suit against Summa Health and the then infertility specialist there, Dr. Nicholas Spurtos. He's now with another fertility clinic in Akron. So can you imagine? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, an ancestry kit is wonderful. You want to find out whether you're, you know, European or whatever. And then she just found out, well, my dad's not really my dad. There are no damages mentioned in the lawsuit right now, so we don't know exactly what they're seeking.
I just can't imagine that. I can't imagine that from either side. I can't imagine being the dad and finding out 50 years later that my daughter is not my daughter. And I can't imagine being the kid finding out at age 50 that the person you've called dad your whole lifetime is not your biological dad. Of course, he's still her father. He raised her. I'm sure the relationship is very strong. But holy moly, that would be earth-shattering for a family.
And not just that, now all of a sudden there's another person that's like part of your family that you didn't know, right?
Well, family medical history.
Right. Right. And you know, with genetic testing, you know, that she might have found this out through genetic testing had she had, you know, because you can inherit all kinds of, you know, chromosomal differences that give rise to disease. And I guess now she knows that. But you have to wonder if the man who's really her father fathered his own child. Do you know what I mean? I mean, did the Harvey right. sperm go to that family? We don't know that. So,
well, and look, she spent 50 years filling out a medical history based on who she thought her dad was, and it's all wrong. Now she's got to find out what's going on with this other guy. What might be in that family history. It's just, it's one of those things that would completely rock your world, and somebody should pay for that. That is one of the biggest medical mistakes we've seen. Fascinating story. Check it out on cleveland.com. We have First Energy admitting it paid bribes to get the corrupt House Bill 6 passed. And we have the fact that the bill was passed. So how does Larry Householder, the accused mastermind of the bribery scheme, now argue there was no quid pro quo in the scheme? The quid pro quo was the bribes paid for the passage. What is the argument, Laura?
Well, he can argue whatever he wants, right? He can put it out on a legal filing and claim it's true. But there's no backing up of this. Like, he doesn't have anything to point to why he says this is true, but he's asked this federal judge to dismiss all the charges against him that he oversaw the largest bribery scheme in Ohio history. And I love that he's saying the prosecutors have showed no evidence of this explicit quid pro quo. It hasn't gone to trial yet. Like, they're still doing discovery and they're thinking this might go to trial in the fall. So I don't know how he can say what the prosecutors have not or might find out.
But wait, the people who paid the bribes
have already admitted guilt.
They've gone into court and paid hundreds of millions in fines saying, yes, we paid $60 million in bribes. And he's saying, no, they're campaign donations.
Right. And not just that. He has all these other co-defendants and 3 out of 4 of them have already pleaded guilty to the scheme. And then the 4th died by suicide last year. So yes, this makes no sense at all. He's saying that government's allegations describe no relationship joining all the alleged associates. Like, remember all those text messages we talked about on the podcast recently and everything they found to link them together and all of the fact that First Energy says, yes, we paid them a bribe. I mean, it's eye rolling.
Well, he must be delusional. I mean, to file something this preposterous in court, you're going to get laughed out of the court. They have shown the evidence. They've gotten guilty pleas. All of the people around you have said, yes, it was a big bribery scheme to get the corrupt bill passed, and you passed it. People forget, First Energy have been trying to get this passed for years. Mm-hmm. And John Kasich, the former governor, said no. The former legislature said no. But as soon as Mike DeWine became governor and Larry Householder managed to become the House Speaker, they raced it through. They put the twist in arms and did all sorts of things. And we now know the whole thing stinks to the high heavens, and it's on the plate of the governor and Larry Householder. Anyway, one of the more amazing filings we've seen in a while. We'll be talking about another amazing filing in a bit.
I just wanted to add that he also asked to not be tried with party chair Matt Borges, who's the one other person left to be tried in this case so far, you know, because there could be a lot more people named. But I love the logic. He said they should be separated because of the coronavirus pandemic. It's like, wait, you were the people that said you don't need to wear masks, but you can't be tried in the same courtroom with this guy because now you're afraid of COVID?
Well, remember, he didn't wear a mask as in the legislature. He would walk around without one. But the minute he got arrested, oh, yeah, he put the mask on to hide his identity. You're listening to Today in Ohio. How is playing the role of Donald Trump's blindly loyal and truth-defying mouthpiece paid off big for Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan? Well, we've talked about how Jim Jordan is one of the biggest embarrassments this state has ever seen with the complete mistruths he utters regarding pretty much everything having to do with Trump, but it's been lucrative.
Yeah, it resonates with his base. Jim Jordan has raised far more money than his counterparts who represent other Ohio congressional districts. In fact, Federal Election Commission reports filed Monday show that he had more campaign cash in the bank at the end of last year than any other Republican U.S. House of Representatives member who's seeking re-election. Jordan's $8.5 million exceeded House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy's $8.3 million, according to statistics compiled by Political Moneyline. That said, though, there are Democrats whose fundraising outpaces Jordan's. California's Adam Schiff, he chairs the House Permanent Selection Committee on Intelligence. He's one of Jordan's sparring political partners. You know, he had the most money in the bank, $16.7 and change. California's Catherine Porter also had more than $16 million. Josh Gottheimer of New Jersey had $12 million, and Raja Krishnamurthy of Illinois had $11.5 million. But as for Ohioans, Jordan left them all in the dust. Jordan had more than 5 times as much cash on hand as Ohio's runner-up, Columbus Democrat Joyce Beatty, who had a little like $1.5 million. You know, I don't know. I can't wait until we're past this ugly era of American politics. And it just feels like a bad dream where people, someone like Jim Jordan can just rake in the cash like this. I mean, ugh.
Well, I just, you wish he was from another state, because every time he appears, it just, it tells the country this is the best Ohio can do. Mm-hmm. Is a guy who just makes up facts in support of a guy who really wanted to overthrow our government to stay in office. It's embarrassing.
Look at how Ohio voted for Donald Trump so overwhelmingly. I mean, maybe Ohio deserves Jim Jordan.
There's still a lot of Ohioans that didn't vote for Donald Trump, but you're right. I know. It's Today in Ohio. How are the Democrats on the Ohio Redistricting Commission blasting Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost in their latest filing before the Ohio Supreme Court? I've never read a filing quite like this one, Lisa. It's pretty astounding what Yost is accused of doing here. I don't understand how this doesn't become a complaint to the bar.
And it's a complicated story to tell. So let me see if I can tell it in a coherent manner. So the two Democrats on the Redistricting Commission, Senator Vernon Sykes and House Minority Leader Allison Russo, filed a protest earlier this week. They're opposed to Attorney General Yost converting their response to an amicus brief or a friend of the court brief. They're saying, hey, we're respondents. We're not, you know, friends of the court here. But basically what happened, Yost has now decided to represent everybody on the redistricting committee, Dems and GOP alike, after previously okaying them to seek outside counsel, which they did. You know, the state has spent $763,000 on legal bills. Most of it went to a law firm representing Bob Cupp and Matt Huffman. I always get their names mixed up. They got $550,764 in legal help. And then a law firm hired by the Dems, they spent $169,467. And then a law firm that represented the entire commission, they only spent about $42,747. And in that case, Yost was the representative for the statewide elected officials, Secretary of State, Governor, and Auditor. But basically, what Russo and Sykes are saying is that by doing this, you're denying us our right to respond to the latest map and the latest objections to the map, because you're lumping us in with the GOP, which has a different, you know, they think the maps are fine. The Democrats do not. So I don't know if I've been explaining this well, but I mean,
let's remind people, the commission was named as the whole as a defendant, but so was each individual member. And Yost had provided them the representation as the attorney general for that represents state officials. For him to turn around and say, I represent you, and then go to the Supreme Court and say, this is what they say, when these two are saying, no, we don't say that. That you just can't justify that. He, you know, this idea that he walled off a lawyer from him,
right,
so that lawyer could represent them, but then that lawyer wouldn't even talk to them. It's an astounding filing. I when I read it yesterday, my jaw was on the floor, because this is not what you do as a lawyer. If you're representing somebody, you represent them. You don't tell them what you're going to file on their behalf. They're the client. You've got to follow their instructions. I'll be very interested to see how the Supreme Court reacts to that, because this is not responsible behavior by the Attorney General.
Well,
I'm glad they filed this, because it opened a window into the shenanigans.
Right. And the GOP, you know, they have claimed that these new maps comply with the proportionality rule, and Yost agrees with them. So he's actually siding with the Republicans on the commission. So the Dems feel like they're out in the cold and they want to have their
they
own.
They don't.
You know, they don't. I'm sorry.
They don't satisfy the proportionality rule.
It doesn't.
We know that. The Supreme Court told them what the percentage is, and they don't meet that percentage. They're still off. So it's just, you know, don't look behind the curtain. We'll tell you what's there, kind of thing. I mean, anybody that looks at the numbers knows that they're not proportional. So to make that claim as the Attorney General of the state is more preposterousness in this case. I hope the Supreme Court rules soon. We'll see. It's Today in Ohio. First, it failed as the MedMart. Then it failed as the Global Center for Health Innovation. It has cost taxpayers untold millions of dollars. We're going to add them all up. And now the people behind it want to spend $46 million more to make it part of the Downtown Convention Center. Laura, this is just throwing away money. What are they thinking?
I did love the plain dealer headline on this, which said, if at first you don't succeed, keep spending, which seems to be the philosophy.
Well, I think didn't it say if in nine times you don't succeed, keep spending. I mean, it was, I mean, this isn't at first. This has been going on for 15 years.
Well, that's very true. I do want to say it was technically renamed the Global Center before it actually opened because the MedMart was a stupid name. But yes, it has never been successful and it's never been cheap. So even though the building gave out all sorts of free and cheap space to get companies to come, it was never the successful draw for doctors and medical executives and conventions that Cuyahoga County leaders envisioned it as. So now the Convention Facilities Development Corporation wants to revamp it for generic meeting space so it can help land bigger conventions. And they say they have no time to think about this. This needs to get done because they want the work done by 2024 when they have a group coming. I believe it's called like the American Association of, I don't know, it's like a bunch of words together that don't make any sense to me, but it's the people that head up all these associations that have conventions. So they want to spend $46 million to add escalators, upgrade space, and build a ballroom for $20 million, even though they have had a ballroom. They've always called it a junior ballroom since the very beginning. So I don't know if they're going to expand into the lobby. The whole thing is an atrium. So much of the space inside the building is just open air.
I've been hearing from people on this before we're even writing much about it or talking much about it that are just aghast. That said, this was always a bad idea. I can't, $46 million that you could use for so many other things that would be beneficial. And what people forget is this was a bamboozling from the day one. The Kennedy family came in because they ran the Chicago Mart and they got Tim Hagen, who was a friend of the Kennedy family, to be their champion. They all came over to the Plain Dealer. We were in the second floor community room, which is pretty huge, and they filled it. It was all the business types and Joe Roman, and they're all talking about how great this thing would be. And they, you know, they said Forest City better back down on its convention center demands. This is the answer. And it was one of those where immediately in our newsroom, we made jokes about, well, I wonder what that building will be when it fails at everything else. I mean, from day one, and we covered the hell out of this thing. I mean, we had a reporter assigned to it full time because the county commission at the time wasn't giving us any of the records. They were hiding what they were spending. Then Laura, you took it over. We sent you to Chicago to see how this works.
I toured the merchandise mart, and the idea was, I mean, because I remember you saying to me, and it was Mark Fosberg, going, what are they going to have, like Q-tips there? Like, what are they putting in this thing?
Right. And it's like on the other side of town from our health center. If you're going to do a medical mart, put it near the clinic. And the kind of equipment they wanted is really expensive. The makers aren't just going to put expensive equipment for like a used car in the thing. And it failed miserably. It's failed every step of the way. They've spent all kinds of money on it. Here's the question I have is, why not just sell it? Let a developer convert it into law offices right across the street from the Justice Center. Get some money back for the taxpayer instead of squandering another $46 million. Think what you could do at $46 million. What if you put that into getting rid of lead paint in Cleveland? I mean, think about the long-term effect of that. They're just going to squander $46 million on this awkward appendage to the convention center.
What they're saying is that the convention center could get bigger, better conventions, but it's being hampered by its lack of meeting space, which you want to be like, dude, the thing only opened 8 years ago. Like, it's not old yet, but they're saying they need
back and
more
read the
meeting
stories.
Space.
Yeah, but go back and read the stories. One of the big selling points of doing the convention center was the meeting space. That was one of their big selling points about it. People forget they could not get the convention center updated. They tried and residents didn't want any part of it. The medical mart brought the business community in and said, okay, let's do it.
It was like the shoehorn to get this passed, right? Yeah. They were like, you know, we studied, when I don't know how many stories we've done about convention centers and how they lose money for cities and counties because they cost a lot to operate them. And you end up giving a lot of it away to spaces for people who come and hopefully spend money. And it's not a money maker. And so people were like, do we really need this convention center in Cleveland? Because the one under the mall and attached to public auditorium for so many years, which is just so outdated. and the ceilings were so low, they really couldn't do anything with it. So, I mean, they used this as this bright, shiny object of the reason we're going to get conventions in Cleveland. And that's why we need this MedMart, so we can get the conventions, and we're going to have a modern space with lots of meeting rooms. I mean, their exhibition hall is not massive. I mean, it can't compete with the IX Center.
But that was not the selling point. The selling point was this is for a certain size convention.
Right.
They've crowed about how successful it's been. So to suddenly turn around and say we're inadequate is ridiculous. You know, this will be an issue in the county executives race. I don't think Armin Budish, even by using sleight of hand, can get this done that quickly. And Lee Weingart's already sent a note to us saying, I'm dead set against this. This is a waste of money. Don't do it. We haven't heard from Chris Ronayne, the Democratic candidate for the job. But I can't imagine those guys are going to want to commit $46 million to something like this when there are so many other big needs. And where's the big discussion about this? Where is the county council? Where are people raising hell about, is this really the best use of $46 million? It's a staggering sum.
I think they should turn it to the jail.
Yeah.
We found the new jail site.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was just going to say, they spend a lot of money on a lot of other things too. Like you look at Progressive Field, and there really wasn't that much discussion about what that money could be better used for. And I mean, I don't want to go all back into that, but they spend a lot of money on a lot of things.
Yeah, the difference with Progressive Field is there are a lot of baseball fans that go there. Well, I don't know that there's anybody that supports flushing $46 million more down into this sinkhole. This is, I expect this will be controversial. And we're going to go back. We're going to look at every dollar ever spent on this thing, add it up, and then show what it cost every household in Northeast Ohio.
I was thinking about that suggestion this morning, because this has all come up from a quarter cent increase in the sales tax that the commissioners put on in 2000. I want to say 2010, but I could be off on the when this happened. So, but remember, every time we buy anything in this county, we are paying an extra 0.25% sales tax toward the Medical Mart and the convention center. So I wonder, like, how much money we've spent total, like, to get to raise the money that has been paying for.
Well, and all
this,
the interest, the mayor, they borrowed it, so we're paying on the interest. And I'm betting no one wants to do it. Look, there's at some point you have to say, this is a bad idea. Let's stop flushing money down the toilet. Let's go another way.
And
just sell it.
The study that they're pointing to, right? The study has a bias, and it says that if you did this work, you could generate $110 million more in annual economic activity. And without it, you're going to lose $81 million annually. And I just don't know where they get those figures.
Okay, well,
I haven't read the whole study, but.
And it runs completely contrary to everything they've ever said about that convention center. We should go back and look at all the selling points that they made about why they should do this, because everything you're saying about why we don't get conventions was covered back then. This was the convention center that was the answer. This was the thing they crowed about. So to portray it now as some loser, it just doesn't work, and it's a lot of money. You're listening to Today in Ohio. We've talked repeatedly on this podcast about the repeated delays and millions of dollars in cost overruns for Cuyahoga County Executive Armin Budish's plan to unify all of the county computer systems. We have good news, I guess, kind of, finally. But can we ever really say, like they are saying, that this project is on time? Layla?
No, we can't say it's on time at this point, because it was supposed to be done ages ago. But that's, you know, that's the funny thing about this whole thing. I actually laughed out loud while I was editing Caitlin Durbin's story on this yesterday. The county has repeatedly requested more time and more money. So when they announce that they're actually going to get it done before this latest deadline extension, and without tapping into the latest extra infusion of hundreds of thousands of dollars they thought they would need, it creates the illusion that they're on time and under budget. But now the good news here is that this is the first time since the inception of this massive IT overhaul that Budish's administrators have reported to county council about it without asking for more time and more money. They're now saying that they're on pace to launch March 13th and won't need the extra $787,000 that they predicted they would need just a few months ago to get this thing across the finish line. The county's IT guy is saying that will save the county $1.4 million. It's so funny to say it that way. I mean, you know, as I said, when you put it that way, they sound amazing. But this thing was supposed to be done by 2018 and cost $25 million. By the time it's finished, it's going to cost taxpayers nearly $37 million. I mean, I guess the lesson here is that the administration should just tell council that every project will likely cost $7 bajillion and be completed in 50 years. And then they'll look like rock stars when they get it done anytime before that and for at least $6 bajillion under budget, right? I mean, that's kind of what their strategy here.
Portraying this as a good news story. Here's the other question, though. We have no idea whether it's going to work.
Yeah, I know.
They're going to finish the project, and then when you go to get your dog license, you know, you're gonna get a mortgage or something back. You know,
way to wrap it back around to the dog licenses from earlier this year.
Yeah, I wonder if all that publicity got people to do the dog licenses. Will it work? This was supposed to unify everything. I can't wait to see how that works out because. This has not inspired confidence. This is something that Buttigieg started early in his first term.
Yeah.
I mean, it was supposed to, like you said, 2018, it's supposed to be done. That was the end of his first term. It's coming to the end of his second term and the end of his time altogether, thankfully. And it's just coming in for a landing.
I know.
So
I don't know that he should claim this as like a legacy thing to be.
We'll see. It's Today in Ohio. What is the first learning to be taken from the big project by the Fund for Our Economic Future to understand why so many people in Northeast Ohio have left the workplace? Lisa, we have not heard yet from the workers, but they did do a pretty serious survey of the employers. What did they learn?
Yeah, the survey is called Where Are the Workers? And it's being done by the Fund for Our Economic Future. They have surveyed 636 Northeast Ohio businesses in all. The biggest thing they found was that there were talent shortage issues. 499 of the businesses responding said that was the biggest problem. 93% say the applicant pool doesn't meet their needs for the jobs that they're posting. Recruitment is another big thing. 85% of those businesses say recruitment is their biggest challenge. They say 53% say that's because of a lack of qualified candidates, which relates to above. Employee retention issues, 49.5% say that's an issue. 79% are paying more to keep their employees. And they're also promoting from within and doing on-the-job training or tuition reimbursement to hang on to these employees because they can't find new ones out there in the workplace that satisfy their needs. Now, as to why people are quitting, these businesses say pay is the number one issue. 76% of these businesses say pay is why people are quitting. The next in line is burnout. 31% say that employee burnout is to blame. Work-life balance or lack thereof, 30.5% say that that's an issue. And way down on the list, for the businesses anyway, is childcare at 22.7%. We also saw a lot of people, 21% said retirement and changing careers had a big impact. 17% said just stress, you know, was an issue among their workforce. But as Chris said earlier, there is a survey ongoing of working age adults, and they're thinking that this may yield different and maybe better data because workers would obviously know what their issues are. And actually, they were kind of surprised that transportation and childcare did not rank higher in the businesses, but they'll probably rank very high among the workers that are surveyed.
What I'm dying to know is if a lot of people have figured out how to go with one-income families, and that's how they're dealing with it. And I'm glad they're doing this. We hear this question all the time. So a salute to the fund for pushing this and for being very transparent, releasing the results as they have. It's Today in Ohio. Okay, I get Pat Benatar. I get Carly Simon. I get Dionne Warwick. But Dolly Parton in the Rock Hall? Laura, that makes as much sense to me as the Partridge Family. Who's the latest roster of possible inductees?
I was going to say it makes as much sense as Johnny Cash, and he is in the Rock Hall.
Oh, no, Johnny Cash makes lots of sense. Oh, my gosh. Music lovers are all just gonna...
Who doesn't love Dolly Parton?
No, Johnny Cash, come on, man. You got to go look at the
roots
of rock and roll. That is completely different. She's much more in line with the Partridge Family or even the Archies.
Oh my God.
No, she's the queen of country. Come on.
With that. But Dave Matthews Band is not on the list, which I found interesting, but here's who is: A Tribe Called Quest, Beck, Carly Simon, Devo, Dionne Warwick, Dolly Parton, Duran Duran, Eminem, The Eurythmics, Fela Kuti, I don't know who that is, Judas Priest, Kate Bush, Lionel Richie, MC5, New York Dolls, Pat Benatar, and Rage Against the Machine. So Eminem looks to become the first, well, the latest first ballot hip hop inductee. And obviously Dolly would be the second traditional country artist into the Rock Hall. A bunch of these folks have been on the ballot multiple times, but Carly Simon and Lionel Richie have been waited decades to be even named to this list.
Yeah, and Lionel Richie's, it's nice to see him getting some credibility. The Commodores in? Does anybody know?
No, they're not.
They're not in, so he's not in at all. That's nice to see him there. Dolly Parton throws me completely, and I think that was the general reaction. It seems like, you know, she's hot right now. Everybody's talking about Dolly Parton the way they were talking about Betty White, and so I think the Rock Hall is just looking to get that buzz, but I mean, really, if we're going to go down that road, why don't we just make it the Pop Music Hall of Fame and bring in everybody? I mean, it's just that to say Dolly Parton in the Rock Hall, I don't get that. But OK, you guys disagree.
I think it's an interesting conversation. Do I think it makes a whole lot of sense? Probably not. But, you know, I feel like Troy Smith could have some fun with, you know, well, he will, I'm sure, with ranking who deserves to be in the Rock Hall versus list. I mean, he's already told us that like so many big artists don't actually deserve to be in the Rock Hall after his elimination rounds a couple of weeks ago. So,
and don't get me wrong, Dolly Parton's great. I mean, yeah, Dolly Parton has done all sorts of terrific music and is a really wonderful person. It's just, this is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and this is not the evolution of rock. This is as kind of soft country as it gets. So, okay, that's it. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, Layla. Thanks to everybody who listens. We'll be back Friday to wrap up the week of news.